I'm here in the studio with Colm from Belfast, from Ireland, and he's here to participate in a wedding with a variety of other visitors. And I thought it would be interesting just to say, Colm, this is your first trip to Alaska, is that correct?
Oh, yes, that's correct. First time in America.
In America as well. So it's been raining a little bit.
Well, used to that.
And yes, and my understanding is that Belfast does get a little bit of rain.
It's a bit damp.
Yeah, and of course it's summer, and so we'd have to have you come back in the winter to make a true comparison. But
I think I have to leave my library book back to the library that day. I mightn't be able to make it back in the winter.
Okay. Well, given that it's summer, what have you noticed so far? You've traveled a little bit around Palmer, in the Palmer area. Mm-hmm. What appears different from, say, your daily life in Belfast?
The thing that sort of surprised me was how not different it was. For a start, to travel around, but here, with everybody speaking English, we're seeing scenes round about you that you see or are so familiar with on TV. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to keep telling myself at times that I'm as far away from home as I've ever been in my life, and yet things are not as strange as all that. Saying that, there's obviously differences. Mm-hmm. We were just talking before we came on air about tipping,
right?
Which takes a wee bit of getting used to, and I'm sure I've offended a few people who think that they've done me good service, mm-hmm. and it hasn't been recognised by me. I apologise to them now, you know. I'm the fellow going about with what I thought was a beard,
right,
until I came here. And now after looking at what's walking past me in the street, I realise I've just got a 5 o'clock shadow and not much more.
Wonderful.
But the tipping is a bit strange. The main thing that's strange that I find is the driving here. The cars, all these huge, powerful cars, mm-hmm. are all moving along so sedately almost. And with long straight roads, I just think back home, there'd be young fellas, idiots, would be doing about 70 miles an hour up to the junctions and then braking at the very last minute. But nobody seems to drive like that in Palmer anyway, you know. Sorry, I say Palmer, not Palmer.
Right.
And I have to learn how to pronounce it right. But that strikes me, the driving and the cars all moving along, sometimes almost zombie-like, all at the same speed, restrained. That seems strange. I'm sure there's other things that will come to mind, but that's...
Well, we've been talking about Palmer as a comparison to Belfast, and last time I looked, Belfast is considerably larger than Palmer. So perhaps there's part of that. And have you been to Anchorage yet?
Well, just arrived in the airport at midnight and left it a half an hour later, you know, so okay. I can't say I have, really.
And my time when I have visited a variety of places in Europe, I think, my impression, the last time I remember coming back to Palmer, and what I noticed here was the streets being very wide and straight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I had realized that I had been on streets that were much more narrow, mm-hmm. and they were curvy,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and vehicles were much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I picked up on that similar, and mm-hmm. there was a different style of driving in a variety of places.
Well, Belfast has got about, I think in the greater Belfast area, you're talking about 500,000 people, about half the size of Dublin, which is the main city in the island. Yes, the center bits of it are the narrow streets. Obviously, were built and designed long before. Well, they weren't designed, possibly, long before cars were invented. There's problems all the time about if cars are parked, the streets are made impossibly narrow for cars. So there are major traffic problems which just obviously don't exist here. You know, I was just wondering how that the four blinking red lights in the centre of Palmer, that would cause absolute chaos back home, but I've never seen anything like that. But and the density, of course, of population,
sure.
is much better. One other thing that I notice here, maybe it's because of the winters, but there doesn't seem to be many people walking about, you know, walking from one place to another. People all seem to get into cars, even for what for me would seem to be a relatively short distance.
Well, that's a very interesting observation, because people like to think of Palmer as a walkable city, and it is.
It is.
For example, I live downtown, and my wife and I walk. I walked over here to the studio this morning. Mm-hmm. I walk around, but I can tell you that I think it has to do with the change of seasons. In the summer, it seems obvious that you could walk about. Mm-hmm. But as soon as it starts getting colder and the snow is down, et cetera, even a 1 mile walk with the wind blowing 20 below zero becomes a difficult thing.
Yeah.
And so you don't have that commitment year round to doing it. So that's what I can only think. Plus, people like their vehicles.
Yes. There's a lovely footpath in the place we are, and it's very little used as far as I can see, you know.
Right.
But I would walk everywhere. It's a beautiful size of town, and it can be surprisingly confusing, because so many of the streets, they're all the same shape, as you say, straight.
Right.
There's all the gaps between the houses, and although I could always find a place I'm going to, I might find I've come up a street that I didn't really expect to come up, because they all look...
Right.
They're all the same sort of theme. They don't look that much different from one another.
Sure,
but, But to cut a long story short, I've really enjoyed the week so far that I've spent in Palmer. You know, and people are so friendly and polite, so polite. Maybe compared to home, you know.
So let's see if we could make a comparison in a slightly different way. You know, my sense about it, it'd be best to try to compare Palmer to a smaller community in Ireland.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So can you think of a smaller community, say, outside of Belfast?
Yes. Yeah. The way people, it would remind me more of the west coast of Ireland, where if you go along the road and you see someone you've never seen in your life before, you know that when they come up to you, they're going to greet you.
Oh, sure.
In some way. So you'd be ready to greet them. And I've become to see right in Palmer, people are more likely than not to say, you know, have a nice day or you know, whatever greeting they have.
Oh, right.
I hate that. Have a nice day. I just. that's another.
my sense about it is, if I'm in Anchorage versus, if I'm in the city versus being out here, I think my own. Behavior in terms of saying hello changes. You know, probably the extreme of that would be in New York City, where you have thousands and thousands of people moving along, and it would be very difficult to say hello to each one of them.
Yes, so it doesn't happen. Yeah, I suppose it's just pure.
No. Have you had an opportunity? I have been in pubs, and I found them to be very, very, very interesting.
Pubs in Ireland, you mean?
Yeah. And in England as well, and I'm wondering if you had a chance to check our establishments, which are roughly equivalent to pubs. We have the Ale House, for example, in downtown Palmer. Make a comparison.
I'm not the best one to do that. There's a sort of stereotype Irishman who is drunk and fighting and all the rest.
Right.
But I fail on both those counts, you know.
Oh, that's okay.
But I'm not a teetotaler, but I don't spend that much time in pubs. One of the things that puts me off with this music being played loud, I cannot stand that. I love the old-fashioned Irish pubs where you can go in, sit down, and talk. And where you go in and you've got music playing far too loud.
Right.
We arrived here at 2 o'clock in the morning about a week ago, and as it was starting to get bright, we were waking up. Mm-hmm. So we went and spent a very pleasant hour in the Palmer Arms, the Palmer Bar.
Right.
There was 3 bars open, but both the other two were really noisy. There was a group playing in one and deafening karaoke in the other, so... that wasn't for us. So we had a very, very pleasant time just talking to the bar staff and the couple of customers in the Palmer Bar.
And certainly I would tend to agree with you.
Sorry, that wasn't a plug. Now, I wasn't paid to say that.
No.
Right. Although if they do want to contribute.
yeah, sure. No, one of the things that I myself have is the same kind of preference, I think, that when I, whether it's a restaurant or a pub-like establishment, it's really nice to be able to be there and actually have a conversation with people. Mm-hmm. And what I've noticed, it might even be a coffee house that plays music so loud that it's just not pleasant to be there. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, you mentioned perhaps a topic that we could explore a little bit when you suggested that there's a stereotype of the Irishman, and you don't quite fit that stereotype. Does anybody, I mean...
yeah, well, I know people that drink too much and fight too much, but they would be possibly an exception. The type of what you will get everywhere, in mm-hmm. every community, you know.
Sure.
I'm sure there's ones like that here. But the unfortunate stereotype of Belfast in particular is the Troubles. It's Catholics and Protestants can't get on, and it's not. You know, it really annoys me that people have this misconception, you know.
How long have you lived in Belfast?
All my life.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you've been there during the time of Troubles and...
Oh, right through it, yeah.
Right uh-huh. through it all. And I would say that I think in my own mind, when I hear Belfast, mm-hmm. I turn directly to that time and all of the coverage and et cetera. What would you say at the present time, how would you describe Belfast then at this time? You're saying it's a more normal place, perhaps.
It's more normal place, it would be wrong, I think, for the British government to take their eye off the ball. I think that the potential for trouble is still there. And unfortunately, I think that there's going to be more trouble before there's complete peace. Mm-hmm. The reason I say that is purely demographic. That the size of the two communities, and I don't like the term Catholic and Protestant. It's I'm an atheist, but I'm an Irish nationalist. And I don't like to be stereotyped as a Catholic, that the size of the two populations is now almost the same.
And what was it before?
It's had, at the time of partition, there was actually 52-53% of children at school were nationalist.
Okay.
But because of the discrimination that followed the years of after partition in 1922, the nationalist population was reduced. Instead of to becoming a majority, was reduced at the start of the Troubles to about 30%. With the Troubles, the British government stepped in and started to see that instead of nationalists being forced to emigrate, mm-hmm. being denied houses, being denied jobs, that they got jobs. And with the result that now, at the latest census, the nationalist share of the population is up to 45% and growing. The structure of the nationalist population is younger. Mm-hmm. I read somewhere recently that 2017, 2018 is the projected date when the two populations will be equal. And I foresee a certain amount of trouble because the unionist mm-hmm. Protestant section of the population, I do not think will give up power completely peaceably, you know. Mm-hmm. But I hope I'm not right. I hope I'm proved wrong.
Okay. So from a political standpoint, then, unionists are dominant in terms of political power?
They are still dominant in terms of political power, yeah.
Okay.
Just about. Uh-huh. But the gap is getting quite narrow now.
Okay.
And it is officially shared, but it is actually more in a stalemate situation that... they seem to be at loggerheads about education policy, health policy, just about everything. When the nationalists say they want one thing, the unionist population seem to decide something else. And with the result that there's been very little done in the 10 years of so-called power sharing. So it's It's not really working out very successfully.
Well, of course, I'm sure you're aware that many people here in the United States think that the U.S. Congress is in a similar state.
So I believe, yes. Yeah. That's the sort of thing. I think a similar thing is happening.
Right. So this leads to the question, and one that has come up here, about whether right now there are two dominant parties in the United States, the Republicans and the Democrats. And basically, the question arises whether those two parties will break a bit with factions within them that will develop and change the structure so it's not just Republican versus Democrat. Mm-hmm. What's the situation in Ireland? Is there a third party? Is there some moderate, one might say moderate group or
Well, the fracturing has taken place. There's, I think, the last election, maybe about 10 different parties.
Mm-hmm.
On the nationalist side, there would be at least, I can think of kind of three anyway. There's an alliance party, which is supposed to be moderate and then the unionist side has actually been really fracturing.
Mm-hmm.
I think possibly four, five, six different unionist parties.
Mm-hmm.
So, that fracturing has taken place. But there are still basically the two biggest parties, Ian Paisley's party, I presume you've heard of him,
right?
The DUP and Sinn Féin, the party
right.
of Gerry Adams. And so they would be the two dominant ones.
Okay. So let's switch a little bit. Here in the United States, there's quite a bit of interest in sports.
Mm-hmm.
And it's arguable that the national pastime of baseball has given way a bit to a few other activities, our version of football, basketball, and so on. Of course, with the World Cup going on, there's been growing attention, the U.S. Participation in the World Cup advancing as it has. And of course, one of the very interesting things, as more Americans become involved with soccer, the best example is the recent loss by the U.S. team to Germany, 1-0, that was applauded because it allowed them to move to the next round,
mm-hmm.
and people were having trouble getting their minds around that, in particular because it seemed like a very complicated system that's built upon how many points were scored, goals were scored compared to this mm-hmm. or that. And it wasn't straightforward. And in the United States, we tend to do this in a straightforward way. If you're going to have a national tournament that results in the championship, it might be 4 out of 7,
mm-hmm.
but basically it's straightforward. You lose, you lose. This has led me to think about, okay, Ireland. What sports do you find in Ireland to be the most interesting or have the largest population of interested followers?
Once again, it's, I was going to say political, it mightn't be the word, it's a question of nationality.
Oh.
Irish nationalists are our biggest support. Well, everybody to a certain or a greater or lesser degree follows soccer.
Okay.
I'm not particularly interested in it.
Yeah.
But I would travel the length of Ireland to see a good hurley match. I don't know whether you've ever seen hurley on TV.
No.
Or it's played with a stick.
Right.
And it is, in my opinion, my humble opinion, the world's greatest game. And it's thousands of years old in Ireland,
right.
and played before huge crowds. That would be our version of football, Gaelic football, would be the main sources of interest of the nationalist people. On the other side of the fence, well, of course, soccer and rugby.
Rugby,
but rugby is gaining, I think, in support among all sections. Once again, I'm not particularly interested in it. I would be most weekends away watching particularly hurley matches or maybe Gaelic football.
Okay.
But I haven't been to a soccer match for many, many years, and I don't think I've ever been to a rugby match. So.
Okay.
And I think what I've said would be typical of a lot of Irish nationalists.
Well, there are two other sports, horse racing.
Horse racing, once again, the typical Irishman would be mad about horse racing. Once again, I fail to tick that box as well. I'm not interested in gambling. I went to horse racing. I remember once with my father, got me to go to the Irish Grand National, and there was millions of people there. And my abiding memory is walking through these crowds and hearing this very high-pitched talk from this woman, or celebratory it was. And she was coming towards me, and I saw her. It was a blazing hot day, but she was wearing this very unsuitable fur coat. Well, she passed within a couple of yards of me, and the stink of her stays with me still. She had obviously hugged a winning horse, I didn't realise quite how smelly horses were until this woman passed me, you know.
Okay.
And I haven't been back since, not just because of her, but because I had no interest in it, you know. Huh. So I'm sorry to, that line of questioning dies a death.
No, it's interesting. And, of course, another more of a spectator, although here in Palmer we have our own golf course. And I know Scotland has a long history.
Golf started in Scotland.
How about Ireland and golf?
It's very big. It's very big. It did get quite costly, that you needed to have some money for membership, and also very snobby.
Oh.
A lot of clubs, they won't allow, there's still clubs that won't allow women members, and even in this day and age. And then other ones who find people are very aggrieved when they fail to get into a club. They've been blackballed by the committee, and they're trying to, all it needs is one member of the committee to say no, and that's it. They don't get their membership.
Wow.
A great deal of just who was it that turned me down, type of thing. So it is a reputation of being a bit snobby, you know.
Well, now you brought up an interesting question mentioning women. Here in the United States, there's been a lot of focus on the relative power and success and all kinds of things associated with men and women. And there have been some interesting changes. For example, I throw out one. In the United States, for many, many years, the medical profession was dominated by men, and that is slowly changing. In fact, pretty quickly changing, so that at the present time, to my knowledge, there are more women going through medical school in a profession which was, and if you said, I'm going to see the doctor, in your mind, you'd have this picture, it'll be a man. But very soon, that's not going to be so. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people following to say how much money do women make as compared to men, et cetera. Do you have any general observations about the situation in Ireland and in terms of men and women and their role in the society?
I think the picture you've painted of America is mirrored in Ireland. I was a teacher before I retired. And what I could see in teaching was, first of all, in the primary schools, there was more and more women, until it's now an almost exclusively female profession. In the secondary schools as well, a similar thing is happening, until if they're not in the majority of teachers, they wouldn't be too far off it. And if you look at the way things are going, teaching profession could become almost entirely female, or largely female. The medical profession, yes, I agree with what you say. The doctors, a lot of the young ones seem to be women. One that you didn't mention, which I have noticed in Ireland, is the law. That I went through a divorce case not that long ago, and one of the things that struck me was that the number of women, young women lawyers were going past. And when I mentioned this to someone, they said that of the... I'm not sure about the exact figures, but of the 40 or 50 who were going through the law, a university, the law department that year, only 5 were men.
Oh.
And that seemed an astonishing figure, but it was borne out by what I could see around me at the courts, the number of women involved. I'm sure there's other professions are going the same way as well.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
That's all happening. Okay. That's happening in Ireland as well.
Well, we're coming to, interestingly enough, we've just about 30 minutes that we've been talking, Colm, and I've enjoyed this immensely. Both the observations through your eyes of Palmer, as well as reflections on Ireland. Is there any other last comments you'd like to make about anything that you we haven't talked about that sort of captures maybe the comparison between Ireland and the United States, or at least Alaska and the Palmer area.
Yeah, I wish you'd made the question a bit more leading than...
I'm trying to make it open-ended.
Yeah, it's open-ended. It's a bit early in the morning to be open-ended. Well, they...
Let me lead with this.
Please.
Food.
Food? Yes. The food, there's so much of it. You know, that the size of the plates we're getting, you know, that and you end up leaving stuff and you know, you want to tell that this isn't a criticism. It's just the food was lovely, but there was just more than we would be
normal portions,
eating. Yeah, what we would consider normal portions. My daughter yesterday had what was in the menu under snack, and my daughter, one of my sons, and myself tucked into it. He cancelled his order. We all got tucked into my daughter's one, and there was still a bit left when the three of us were replete. And that was a snack. So we were thinking, what on earth is the main course like if this is a snack?
I would tend to agree with you. My wife and I very often will share an entree. Because the typical entree is too much for one of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially as you start to get older a bit, you don't need as much food, and you just physically can't.
Well, then maybe we could finish up with this. What would you consider to be your favorite meal if you were to, on an ordinary day, be going to dinner in Ireland?
There's quite a nice Chinese restaurant here. I've eaten there, and it's good. I like Italian food, and it's surprising me that you know, there isn't an Italian restaurant, or that Italian dishes don't seem to feature too much on the local menus. Now, I haven't seen them all, and
there is an Italian restaurant, but it's over toward Wasilla. Yeah,
is that right? Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. I'll maybe eat there before we leave.
Sure.
That was one of the things, and I mentioned my daughter before, but she was in. I can't help thinking that you know, when I speak to people here, the accent doesn't strike me so much as American as more Canadian. I think if any of you were to come to Belfast and speak. They might get asked, which part of Canada are you from?
Oh, right.
Because I think that's you have a softer, it's not so committed as the accent of the lower 48. I am learning.
That may be well true.
I'm learning my terminology. That was one of the things that, I've distracted myself there. What was I saying?
We're talking about food.
Food, yeah. That she was in Toronto, and I assumed a city the size of Toronto, you would be getting food from every conceivable corner of the world. And she says, no, she traveled a fair bit about, and it was all sort of steaks, ribs, burger bars, and all the rest of it. And she was very disappointed.
Very interesting.
Very disappointed with that, you know. So that would seem to be here, that there's a lot of food, but maybe the breadth of the, what is it?
The selection
is maybe a bit narrow.
Okay. Well, good. Well, thank you, Colin, for coming in here and sharing this.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, you did well.
Ganyan Awaidich.
All right. Well, enjoy the rest of your stay here. Expect that there'll be adventures still ahead.
Undoubtedly.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.